Roughly 70 million NCAA men's tournament brackets are filled out each year. And the odds of a perfect bracket are about 1 in 9 quintillion. That one is here with us today. And we are back, Mike Green.
That's great.
Close last year.
Greeny nailed it last year. We just didn't lean into it with enough conviction. But you picked UConn. You called UConn based off of the data that we're going to use to this year to like find comp champions in the in March Madness generally fit a similar profile, and we're going to get into a lot of that today. But yeah, Greeny, you were all over it last year. You had UConn early.
Yeah, I think I gave you UConn and Houston as my top two most likely, with a few fringe ones. And again, this year, I've got two favorites and a few fringe ones that we'll get into.
Yep. Yeah.
Certainly.
I can't believe the odds are that low. You have better odds of winning Powerball.
Yeah. I mean, play Powerball every day. Instead of trying to get a perfect bracket for $5,000.
Really shouldn't be that hard.
I mean, it's never happened. It never will. It's just, it's impossible. You gotta flip a coin 63 times in a row and have it be heads every time.
And you have to flip a coin after the first round. You have to flip a coin that's predicated on the coin you already flipped that you don't know the answer to.
Even better. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, this year is the year. Gibby's right. It's us. And this is the year. And we're doing it. We got high hopes.
So we have the one seeds, right? There's Houston, UConn, UNC, and Purdue. I was reading a lot, and I don't keep up with the season as much, but I start to get into it like during conference title games and everything, conference tournaments. It sounds like the game that everyone wants is Purdue and UConn. Is there a chance we see that? Are those the two front runners, Green?
I'd say, well, first of all, there's a contingency of fans that love to hate on Purdue because they've had a lot of early round upsets.
Yeah.
You know, our dear friend Tom Cummings, who is a Purdue fan, hates Matt Painter, is expected to lose early because he's kind of made a habit of this. So I think, yes, it's what people want to see because it's two of the best teams against each other. But also there's a subset of folks that are always rooting against Purdue. I would say the third head in that power trio is, of course, Houston. So I think a Houston-UConn title would also be something that people are really interested in. And really, until they got destroyed by Iowa State, I mean, they were probably the favorite. And that one data point, it was such a bad beatdown by the Cyclones that it took Houston off the top spot. But they're right up there with Purdue and UConn, I'd say.
I put a futures bet. I told you this, Greeny, a few weeks ago in on Tennessee, but no team has ever lost the first game of their conference tourney and won a national title. It's never happened. So we don't really bet on outliers. So that one's probably dead. I wish they would let me cash out, but they won't. So here we are. But yeah, the teams you mentioned are all in that group that we love of KenPom teams, top 30 in both efficiencies for offense and defense. And there's only been one outlier in the past, I think, like 10 years. And it was UConn a handful of years back because they were like 37th in offense. Every other champion has been top 30 in both. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's really in the KenPom era, which goes back to 2002, you've got kind of three outliers. The two UConn titles, you had the Shabazz one and the Kemba run. And then you had the Carmelo Syracuse team. Those are the three teams that – sort of defy convention a little bit. But yeah, other than that, teams are always top 30 in both almost exclusively. Although there was a bad defensive Nova team in 2018. They were like 60th or something like that. So you could get away with a subpar defense if you have an elite offense. Yeah. But numbers tell us is that if you don't have an elite offense, you're in trouble. And so I think that's ultimately what probably does Tennessee in. Not going to say it's impossible because, I mean, I just named there's been three outliers in the last 22 years. So it happens.
Yeah.
If you're betting I'd lean away from Tennessee. That goes for Iowa State too. Elite defensively, but they're number 55 in offense. Even North Carolina, who's going to get a lot of love, they're number 24 in offense. So they're good, but not great. And really, this tells us is you have to be great offensively. You know, defense wins championships is the old adage, but in March Madness, really, you got to make buckets in a tight game down the stretch. 1 minute left, can you score? And those elite teams could do it more consistently.
So tell me a little bit about the KenPom. I read about it, and I was, where did this originate? Like, tell me a little bit about the backstory of the KenPom.
Kenny P is our guy.
Yeah, KenPom, again, started in 2002. And, you know, he's a statistician and a basketball fan. I don't know his whole background. Okay. But essentially, what he wanted to do is say, I want to know what the numbers are actually telling us. You know, if Duke beats Alcorn State by 30, what does that actually mean? How much were they supposed to beat them by? Were they supposed to win by 40 and actually they played poorly to win by 30? Or were they supposed to win by 15 and actually winning by 30 is a lot? So a lot of it is performance versus expectations. And what they do, they adjust for opponent. So how good or bad is the team you're playing? And then they adjust for tempo too. Because if you put up 80 points and you're shooting the ball every, you know, 10 seconds into the shot clock every time versus putting up 80 points in your Virginia and you hold the ball for 30 seconds, you know, 80 points for Virginia is much more statistically relevant and much more impressive. So it adjusts for tempo, it adjusts for how many possessions you have, and it adjusts for the opponent. And he was the original, Ken Pomeroy, KenPom.com. I've been a loyal paying member.
You know he's an OG too, because if you go to the site, it doesn't look like he's updated it in like 15 years. It's like the Walter football mock draft site of this.
And it actually knows what they're talking about.
Yeah.
There have been some newcomers to the game the last five or so years.
Mark
Torvik is a popular one. And Evan Mia or Maya, last name is M-I-Y-A. They both have a lot of loyal followers as well and are pretty good. They've got some cool, interesting ways to sort data and find out, you know, different odds on things than KenPom. KenPom's pretty straight down the middle. Here's how good you are. Here's who should win by how many points. Whereas the other ones can sort a little bit more, which is cool.
Well, that's kind of like what, and not to digress too much, but that's kind of what Haralabob Vulgaris was doing right with the NBA. He had a model well before everyone else, but he was using it to bet.
Vegas shut him down. They won't let him bet. Vegas paid him off to stop betting.
Really?
Vegas said, if you keep doing this, people are going to, he could monetize it and he could, there's a whole backstory. You should look into it sometime. Basically, Vegas essentially paid him off to stop gambling because he was killing them with this model. And they bought the algorithm from him and then paid him off to stop betting. That's as good as it gets. I like, Kelly Ford is good too. He's more KenPom, where it's just like, here's the data, extrapolate it how you feel makes sense. But to Greeny's point, I think you can have a lot of success betting college basketball if you take KenPom, Torvik, Kelly Ford, Maya, and figure out what the commonalities are in those models team-wise. There's always going to be a handful of teams that show up in every one of those models as a team with a shot at it. And you can do pretty well just literally hammering those teams throughout the tournament. You also, I heard a cool stat the other day, not related to this, but for games where there's a heavy double-digit favorite, bet the underdog for the first half and then turn around and bet the favorite for the second half when the line shrinks a little bit. And you get a lot of good value that way, because a lot of these like big 1 versus 16, 2-15, they come out a little flat and the team that has nothing to lose comes out playing nothing to lose. And so if they're a 15-point dog in the first half or like 12, they're probably going to cover it and then they have no chance of really winning, but you can kind of get both ends of it. So a little nugget there might help people out.
I mean, that's my favorite part of the tournament. You get Rudy Ruger shooting threes when they're the 15 seed, and he hits a couple, and then all of a sudden you're covered. You brought up, you know, Carmelo, and then I think that Villanova team had Brunson and DiVincenzo. Are there any players or any like trio of players that could kind of buck that trend outside of like the Houston, Purdue, UConn? That, you know, you don't necessarily need the great offense. Are there any like individual stars this year that you think are going to explode?
Yeah, good question. I mean, you know, part of the surprise of it is sometimes you don't know when it's coming. It's specifically the Shabazz Napier run. Like, nobody saw that one coming. But, you know, if you're thinking about a few people who can, you know, there's a team that has been talked about a lot this year. Personally, I think they got overseeded. They got gifted a three. But Kentucky is just stacked with talent, right? If you look at an NBA roster 5 years from now, who's going to have the most players? It's going to be Kentucky. So Reed Sheppard being a freshman there, who's just gone off. But really, there's five or six guys on that team. The one Dylan. Guy, you know, our buddy Danny was at the Big Ten tournament live. And he mentioned how good Terrence Shannon looks live.
Yep.
You know, put up 40 and 36 in back-to-back games. I don't think he's a guy who's done it consistently enough, and he missed some time for legal issues earlier in the year, so he might not show up on radars quite as much.
He's what I like to call a Sean Marion all-star.
Okay.
The way his game looks does not equate to how the outcome looks when he's done. Like, his game is ugly. His shot is ugly. It doesn't really look like he can play, but he dominates games. Like, what was that we were talking about the other day? He had most points ever in a Big Ten tournament game. That's not nothing. Like, that's a big deal. There's a lot of those games that, but he doesn't look pretty out there. Like, his jump shot looks very gross, and it doesn't look like he knows what he's doing, but he's good.
And the nice thing about that Illinois team too, and, you know, I'm not sure I don't know how much I believe in Illinois, but when you look at Shannon at the head of things, and Demansk from Southern Illinois is really good. Hawkins is solid. So they've got complementary pieces as well. And back to the whole, you need elite offense sort of thing. They're number three in KenPom in offensive efficiency. So 93 on defense, probably not going to win the title with that, but you know, that's a team that could potentially at least make a run.
But that's a great point too, Greeny. You can do, if you're interested in like picking a bracket, is a different thing, because like we talked about earlier, the odds are so low. You have to get so many things congruently right. But if you're looking to bet these games, play style comes into effect quite a bit. Like, so James Madison, Wisconsin, round one. James Madison likes to play quick. They like to get up the floor. They get a lot of possessions. And Wisconsin kind of is like a little UVA in that they want to grind you down and like slow the thing down. Western Kentucky, for instance, has led the country all year in possessions per game, like blowing people out, and they don't play any defense. So, but if they're matched up against a team that can't score and they're just relentlessly attacking, you know, that's where upsets tend to pop out too. So if you're going to pick upsets, you really got to pick teams that match up well in terms of their stylistic fit against the opponent.
That's a good point. The, you know, back in the day, they used to call it giant killers, right? There was a couple guys that had that blog that was bought by ESPN. But anyway, their whole thing was, do you play a risky style too? Because if you're going to play, you know, if you're going to play and you're just going to try to be better than a four seed or a five seed, and they've got better athletes at every position, you know, playing a certain way or not taking risk, not taking a lot of threes, not forcing a lot of turnovers, you're not going to do it that way. Now, the flip side is you shoot a lot of threes and you play aggressive defense and go for turnovers, you might get blown out as well, but you're going to give yourself a higher chance of maybe sneaking the upset when you look at things like turnover percentage and 3-point percentage.
It's chasing upside. We talk about this a lot in everything, like fantasy sports, life, stock picking. I would rather lose chasing some upside rather than just taking the guaranteed floor with no upside, because it's just slow road, right? Depends on your risk tolerance, but you're right. Yeah, some of those risky teams will win out. Yeah.
Before we get into some of the picks and some of the teams that we want to highlight, storylines, right? Is the biggest storyline of this tournament that there's no Jim Nance, or is there's something else that we need to?
I wish we had him.
I forgot actually that we don't have Jim Nance, so that is a shame. And then and then the Masters, we're losing Vern Lundquist too. This is a tough year. End of an era for a couple of legends.
Yep.
I don't know. Storylines, it's the tournament. There's always going to be great storylines. I think when I saw the bracket come out, first thing that popped in my mind was, I forget what region it is, but the UNC region, Arizona's the two there. And can't you see, people are going to be going nuts about the whole Caleb Love thing, right? Yep. For those who don't know, Caleb Love was at UNC last year. Fans hated him. His players, his teammates didn't seem to get him. I don't want to put anything out there. I never heard any stories that they disliked him by any means. He was known as a high-volume shot guy, and he didn't really make a whole lot of those shots. He was very inefficient last year, was pretty much run out of town, and then he goes to Arizona. He's the best player on one of the four or five best teams in the country, a team that wins the Pac-12 regular season. So that will be everybody's storyline in the Elite Eight if those teams happen to match up.
We got robbed of some storylines, though. Like you were saying last night, like St. John's not getting in, like not having Patino in the tournament is a miss. Like, you know, I feel like we missed out on some storylines with some of these bubble teams that didn't make it.
Yeah. I would have thought they'd put Patino in just to have Patino in, right? I mean, a couple good sound bites, and they've been playing great, and they have some big wins, but you know, ultimately it was a strong bubble and not everybody got in, especially Big East teams on the bubble, which I know Big East.
Way more bid stealers this year than any other year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Give me only three this year, which is the fewest in like 25 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's weird. They rate out as the second best conference. So,
Well, wasn't there some conversation around, I heard Kim English was like trashing the data, but the bottom of the league, DePaul and I'm forgetting who the other, they were like catastrophically bad.
DePaul might have been the worst power conference team of all time this year. They were truly horrific. Okay.
And so that's four wins right there that really don't count. So a lot of those records are inflated because everybody beat those two teams. And so there was a lot of the coin flip was lost there because the bottom of the conference was quite literally just buys, two buys, four games on because those teams were all time. But I don't know. Who knows? They're never going to get it right every time. They're doing the best they can. And what did our buddy Danny say last night? Like, it's a product. They want people to watch. Like, they're not necessarily trying to find the 68 very best teams. They're trying to find teams that they think can make some noise, and you know, social media blows up with some random dude like that Indiana State dude would have been great because not everybody knew about him.
Yeah,
we lost that.
Another story that I'm always interested in is the seeding aspect of things, right? And like how overseeding and underseeding. If you underseed a team, obviously it hurts that team, but it also hurts anybody that they have to play against. And you know, I think. The most famous example of this, to go back, has been a while, but like the 2013 Wichita State team, they were top 20 in KenPom. They got a 9 seed. They beat Gonzaga in the second round. That screwed Gonzaga, right? Gonzaga had to play a top 20 team in the second round when they were a 1 seed, right? Yeah. And the very next year, flip the script, Wichita State is now a 1 seed, and they get matched up against Kentucky, who's an 8 seed, but they were like number 15 at KenPom. So then they got, you know, they got the exact same treatment as the year before. Both those teams, 2013 Wichita and then 2014 Kentucky, went on to the Final Four. But ultimately, my point is the number one seed was punished for having an underseeded team there. I don't know how many we really have that apply this year. If you look at KenPom, you know.
Honestly, how far down are you going to go? Like how many, like one, two, three seeds and their opponents? Or how many, four on is like anyone can win, right? 4-13 is kind of free for all.
I mean, one of the biggest ones is New Mexico, barely sneaking in. They weren't going to make the tournament unless they won the final. They're number 21 at KenPom. They're facing off against six seed Clemson. They're going to be.
They've got a Patino at the helm.
You looked at it last night. I forget what the line was, but isn't New Mexico like a 4-point favorite in an 11-6 game? Like
last night they were.
Not only you punish New Mexico, but you punish Clemson too.
Yeah.
And then Baylor, who they play, you know, Baylor's a 3 seed, right? And then potentially going up against a top 20 team.
And they're not. Baylor doesn't deserve that seed either.
Yeah, I mean, Baylor in that like theoretical matchup, Baylor would probably be, I don't know, 2 or 3 point favorite over New Mexico on a neutral as a 3 versus an 11. So again, you're punishing a 3.
I think Texas A&M as a 9 seed who will play Houston in the second round. That one could be a tighter game than people think because A&M's got a lot of athletes and a lot of those dudes played with each other growing up. So there's like an extra element there. Like those guys all kind of went to school in similar areas, a lot of the recruits. So that could be a tough one, but Houston, I think, is the least susceptible of all four outside of UConn. I think Houston and UConn are in their own tier, honestly, in terms of like how susceptible they are to getting sniped by somebody.
Yeah.
So it doesn't bode well for them on that front, but it's there. It's possible.
Yeah. I mean, you know, here's the thing about a single elimination tournament. All these little pointers we're giving out, right? They all might be out the window by Thursday afternoon. I mean,
yeah.
They were last year, Green. We're going to hold on to that.
But you bring up an interesting point with Texas A&M. It's something that I often go back to. If you go back to preseason, right, people always complain about preseason rankings. Like, oh, what does this mean? These are pointless. But really, you know, a preseason ranking, to me, it's how good is your roster?
Yep.
End of story. And then we play 30-some-odd games, and the results tell us a different story. But talent-wise, with the exception of injuries and everything, preseason projections probably tell us more about your roster construction and yep. your overall talent level than end-of-season rankings do. And so Texas A&M is one of those teams that was really highly ranked in the preseason. So that tells you they have a strong roster. To my knowledge, I don't think they've had any major injuries. So the talent's there. Yeah, they went through a couple stretches where they lost some games, but, you know, that could just be small sample size too. So, yeah, I mean, I like teams like that. Other ones that fit the bill there is Michigan State. You know, preseason top five, obviously plummeted way down. Kansas, they've got injury issues. So McCullough and Dickinson, I don't know if they're healthy or not. If they are, you know, Kansas's ceiling is much better than a four seed.
Yeah.
Gonzaga and St. Mary's both fit that bill. FAU is another one. Preseason top five slipped all the way to an eight. So just something to think about. Those teams are teams that have great rosters. They didn't quite live up to expectations. But in a single elimination tournament, they might be the more talented team, even if they're the higher seed.
And the matchup might favor them. And I think I was looking too at Torvik. He runs a model every year that basically looks back at all the previous champs and then takes their profile and tries to find lookalikes, right? So similar teams. And a team that showed up there that has also shown up in some other places for me that I was kind of surprised at is Creighton, the old Craichton. They're showing up in some spots, and they also are top 10. They're 12th in adjusted offense and 24th in defense. So they technically fit the bill. You know, their draw isn't that bad. They're going to get Akron and then some combination of South Carolina and Oregon. Both of those teams are gettable. And then they're going to get a Tennessee team or a Texas team in the Sweet 16 that we don't know we're going to get. So, like, that could be one of those teams this year that sneaks up. Gibby, you like that? I saw you making some noise.
I've been excited about Creighton all day. I like the three-star theory, right?
And
They open it up for each other, and it's a Green's point early in the episode. You need to score buckets when it gets down to like 2 minutes left in the game, and they have three guys that can, and in different ways too, right? And so they can space the floor. They're going to be a challenge for opposing defenses. So I am in on Creighton, and also like they're not scared of anyone. They beat UConn, right? And
I mean, they were one play away from the Final Four last year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, I'm all in on Creighton. And watch them get bounced on Thursday at 4 p.m.
If you can make any comparison between the NBA and college too, right? Where NBA, you're going to rest guys throughout the year. And I'm not saying Creighton did this per se. But in the NBA, playoffs are all about your five best. Regular season is about how deep you are. Do you have 8, 9 guys you can reliably go to? And if so, you're going to build up a gaudy record. But once you get to the playoffs, like Lakers last year, right? All right, now we're just playing our five dudes, and we're going to turn it on, and we almost made the finals. And Creighton, to me, sort of fits that bill. They're 1 through 5. That's one of the best starting fives in the entire country. But they are not deep. And, you know, that kind of – they're a lot like Kansas in that regard, who I just talked about. Kansas probably has the best starting five. Creighton might have the second best starting five, or right up there with a number of other teams. But yeah, they're just not deep. But in the tournament, you're just going to play those dudes like 35 minutes, 36 minutes. So
there are going to be timeouts. There are going to be TV timeouts they don't get during the regular season, right, to give guys an extra minute on the bench. So
the winner this year is going to come from this group, almost guaranteed. Like, take your favorite pick here. Arizona, Purdue, Houston, UConn, Tennessee, Auburn, Marquette, UNC, Creighton. The winners coming out of that group. I feel pretty confident in saying that. Like, I know that's a lot of teams, and it's not like a massively hot take, but the data led me to all of those teams showing up in the center of the Venn diagram of all the different models that I look at. They all have the right profile to do it, and Creighton was definitely the one that surprised me the most out of that group.
Personally, I'd narrow it down even further. I got five teams, I think.
Oh, let's get them.
I think you just named them all. UConn, Purdue, those are your two. Again, I'm going back to data says UConn, Purdue, heavy favorites. Zona, Arizona right there.
Yep.
And then Houston and Auburn sort of a step behind.
Yep.
So I think in order, you got UConn, Purdue, Arizona, Houston, Auburn. Those five would be where I was talking about the last 22 champs. And to give you some numbers on that, I hope this, you know, this isn't too many numbers jumping around, but
no, love it.
Go back the last 22 years, 19 of them, 19 champions have been top six at KenPom coming in. Mm-hmm. And they've been top 15 in offense.
Yep.
15 of those 19 have been top seven in offense, so even a step above. And so that's where I say UConn and Purdue separate themselves because they are elite, elite. They are both right at the top. UConn is number one, Purdue is number four.
Yep.
You got to take a little bit of a step down to get to Arizona and Auburn that are at 8 and 10. Houston's at 17. So they're not elite. Again, most of the time we're seeing top six, seven offenses, but they're good enough that, like, they fit that other profile. So to me, that's my five that I'm targeting, and those two in particular, even though it feels real scary to bet on Purdue. But and honestly, betting on UConn, there's probably not value. They're plus 450.
No.
I don't know if I love that. So I'm not saying go put futures bets on them, but for filling out a pool, I wouldn't recommend picking anybody other than those five personally.
The shame in this is that two of those teams of those five are going to meet before we even make it to the Elite Eight, most likely, which is unfortunate, especially for me and Pardo. UConn and Auburn are on a crash course to play in the Sweet 16. And that's like, it's going to be the best game of that, that round. But it's going to be a shame that, like, you know, even if you could have given Auburn another, like, a three seed, right, swap them with Illinois and they wouldn't meet until the Elite Eight, that would feel better. But we're going to lose one of those five for sure by the Sweet 16, which has got to be taken into consideration as you start planning out, like, what you're going to do with some of these bets or pools.
Yeah. Yeah. And I definitely think, you know, we talked about it last night and we talked about it earlier today even, right? The whole idea of misseeding a team. Auburn was misseeded, right? I mean, this is every advanced metric has them top 10, top five, a lot of places. They won their conference tournament. I get it. Resume is not great. And you and I have talked about this last few weeks. Part of why I can't bring myself to really pick them is they don't have great wins. They beat Alabama at home, but everybody beat Alabama at home.
Yep.
They beat Florida and Mississippi State on a neutral court. Like, that's it. That's the totality of their quad one wins. So they haven't proven that they can do it, even though the numbers suggest they're capable of doing so. So I don't know. The data is the reason I put them in there, not my gut necessarily, but I follow the data over my gut. It knows a lot better than I do.
Well, they're better suited data wise than anybody, right? They're 10th in adjusted offense and 4th in defense, and UConn is 1st in offense and 10th in defense. So depending on how you weight those, like, they've got the best data. They've got the best profile, to your point, Greeny.
And they got dudes, man. Jani Broome is a beast. I mean, I think I saw him in top five in Wooden Award list from a lot of people. I mean, they can make it happen. I know a lot
of their interior defense is tough too. They do not get beat inside. If you've got like a Purdue that likes to win inside, then it's not going to work against them. So that's where the matchups will come into play. Yeah.
Is there a team outside of those five teams, right, that probably won't make the Final Four? Maybe they do. Maybe they sneak in. But that you've sniffed out that, like, this could be a Cinderella team that gets the Sweet 16, Elite Eight as an 11 seed or a high seed?
So one thing I will point out, I read this. I just came across it. Never even heard of this guy. Came across it today doing a little research. Will Warren. He's got a cool blog, a lot of statistics on college basketball. Not necessarily, he's basically taking KenPom data and sorting it and writing a story through it. But Yeah. Evidently, this is the largest gap ever. If you look at the average rating of the 1 through 4 seeds in KenPom versus the 13 through 16 seeds, it's the largest gap in any tournament ever. And there's only 4 other tournaments that have even been close to that. And in those 4 tournaments combined, 13 through 16 seeds won a combined 3 games. So I know that was a lot. Point is, the 13, 14, 15, 16 seeds, we've seen a lot of those teams win in the last 5 years.
Yep.
This is not probably a year you're going to see those types of teams make a run. So you said like an 11 seed or a 12 seed, that's where you might see something. And I think there's a lot of teams. I already talked about New Mexico. I think that's a quality team. Would not be shocked to see them.
Colorado's rates really highly. The data likes them.
Yeah. See, and they got a top 5 pick. They got Cody Williams, who he struggled a little bit. He had an ankle injury in February. He struggled a little bit since he came back, but he was awesome early in the season. I mean, they can make it. Nevada. You know, the Mountain West teams tend to struggle in tournament, but I think that's more small sample size than anything.
Yep.
Your McNeese Cowboys. I mean, MP, I'm surprised you haven't made a.
Well, so I was honestly, Greeny, I'm eyeing them right now because I wanted to talk about it. So perfect segue. You read my mind. So 2 things here. One, I actually, of the seeds outside of the top 4, the team that I like to make a run is Gonzaga as a 5 seed. The only thing I don't love about it is that they have to play McNeese right out of the gate. And that's a good team. That is a legitimate. You plop that team into a power conference, they're a top 4 team in that conference. Like, they are legitimately good. They've got a coach who knows what he's doing, who's been there, who kind of got like run out of LSU and ended up there. So I really like Gonzaga's profile, right? They're 9th in offense, 46 in defense, but they got to get past McNeese. And if they do that, so this leads me to my next point. I think the upset of the first round, I think Kansas is going to lose in the first round to Samford. Kansas has been fool's gold all year. They got 2 guys they don't even know if they're going to play, and they happen to be 60% of their offense.
They're 2 best players, right?
Samford plays quick. They got some guys that the portal changes this because they got guys who transferred from guys that end up at Samford who were at like Purdue but didn't play but could have. They were recruited there. So I think that bracket – so my prediction is that bracket, so the Midwest is going to be wild. Anything could happen between the Gonzaga, McNeese, Kansas, Samford matchups that will drastically impact what happens from there. But I do like the winner of Gonzaga, McNeese to make it to the Sweet 16 to play Purdue.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that Samford pick too, I think, you know, they only played 1 high major team this year, and it was Purdue, and they lost by 40. So not a great data point for them. But that was first game of the year. So like you said, Samford did rebuild a little bit through the portal. So new guys coming in, you know, and Purdue plays a lot different than a Kansas does too. And we talked earlier about 3-point percentage being big. They are top 10 in 3-point shooting percentage, and they shoot a lot of them. So, you know, that is the type of profile that certainly helps. The one thing is they do not turn teams over very much. So that hurts against them a little bit in terms of the whole giant killer thing. But to me, it all comes down to, is Kansas healthy? If they're not, then they're susceptible. I think if Miller and Dickinson are 100%, might be an uphill battle for Samford, but you know, health is everything this time of year. So I agree with you with any sort of injuries and with the way Samford shoots the 3, I like that matchup.
And they don't turn anybody over. You're right. But they press every possession. They got guys who are just all, it's chaos. They're just trying to like muck it up and hope that you make some mistakes. So it's strange that they don't turn more people over with playing a press like that.
MP, you're right. I was looking at, they do turn the ball over too much. They're 309 in offensive turnover. They're top 10 in defensive turnover. So my bad.
Okay. So that makes sense then. So we just, on air, we just basically locked Samford into a round 1 win. We just laid it out.
Yeah.
It's not any harder than that.
Put it on the board. We're good there.
I love it.
So, Maddie, do you want to start us off? Give us a couple teams that you're projecting
So do you want to just like, should we just throw a final 4 together, each of us real quick on the
front
here?
Final 4.
All right. So I will take, I think Houston comes out of the South, chalk there. I think that since the Midwest is like such chaos, I actually think Gonzaga has a really good shot of coming out there just to pick an upset for fun. I think they'll make it out. In the West, I think I don't really trust North Carolina that much. There's something about it. I love their point guard. Obviously he's probably the best in the country, but the rest of the team seems like they never really play in unison. So out of the West, I think Arizona comes out of the West. I like that team a lot. And then I think UConn comes out of the East. So a 1 seed, a 2, a 5, and a 1.
Who was the 5 you went with? I missed that.
Gonzaga.
Nice. Okay.
I like that. Whoa, doctor.
All right. We're pretty similar, Maddie. And then we'll let Green finish it off here. I've got Houston. I have Creighton. I have Arizona. And I have UConn.
Yep. Wow. Okay.
We might all have that UConn Arizona Final Four matchup, but
okay.
I think, you know, I haven't sat down and filled out the whole bracket, but as I'm just looking at these teams, those are the teams I trust the most. And I don't see a whole lot of teams getting in their way, although Arizona's dropped some games they shouldn't this year. So you never know. But if they're playing their best, I like them to come out of there. I do like UConn. The Midwest, I want to say Purdue. I think it's Purdue.
But like, they're due.
If they lost to Utah State in the second round, I wouldn't be that crazy shocked. I think if they get past them, though, nobody else in that region really scares me that much. I mean, we talked
about Creighton
and their upside. So obviously there's that. Tennessee, they've spent a lot of this year looking like one of the top three teams in the country. But again, I'm worried about their offense. So I'm going to be boring and go a 1 there again with Purdue. And then in the South, all right. A week ago, I told you Duke, and then they lost to North Carolina twice in a row. When they've played anybody other than North Carolina, they've looked awesome for the majority of the year. I don't know. Is that an individual matchup thing? I don't know. I don't think I could trust them to go all the way. Marquette is the 2. Again, we're worried about injuries. I don't think I see that happening. You know, just to be different and not go 1-1-1-2, I'll throw out Kentucky. I can't believe we've gone this whole podcast without talking about them, although
they
probably have the most NBA talent. I don't think they can win at all, mainly because of the defense. We talked about it. They're number 108 in the country in defense.
Yep.
Yep. There's just no data point to suggest any team that's that bad at defense winning a title.
I tried to will them to be better over text a few weeks ago, and you threw cold water on it, as you rightfully should do. And I always need someone to keep me in check. But I was like, Kentucky's heating up. They're making a run. And then they literally roiled off like 3 terrible losses in a row, all because they couldn't get stops. So
now I also think they're overseeded. They should not be a 3. They should be a 4.
No, that should be Auburn's 3. Auburn should be the 3. Yeah. Kentucky should be the 4 that has to get smoked by UConn. That would be perfect, because then I would pick Auburn to run that bracket.
But for the purposes of this, you know, if we're just talking about getting to the Final Four, let's not forget, when you get to the Final Four, you still have to win the 2 hardest games of the year. And those are the games that I'm saying Kentucky cannot win. Can they get there, though? Just for the interest of not picking 3 1s and a 2, I'm going to say a number 3 with Kentucky. Special shout out, like I said, to Duke, maybe, but the 3 losses to UNC threw me off their scent a little bit.
Yeah. Kentucky having to beat Marquette to get to Houston, theoretically, is not a bad road.
Yeah, agreed. And I don't know what they did against Florida this year. Florida's obviously, they've put up a lot of points in a few games. I don't know what they've done head to head, but they would potentially face each other. Well, I guess Florida would have to get through Marquette there, so.
So Kentucky, they lost to Florida in OT by 3, and then they won the other game by 2 at Florida. So they lost at home and they won on the road. Both games were within 3 points.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So who knows? Who knows? If we're to shake out that way and they face off in the Sweet 16, could be a good conference rematch there. But anyway, who knows? But I think I like those teams.
Yep.
I love
Kansas,
it.
Kansas is already down to -7.5. That line opened at 9.
Boy, Buckyball coming for you.
Oh, baby, the chaos. All right. Sorry, Gibby. Go ahead. I got excited.
No, you're good. No, I wanted to you know, give everyone a taste of March Madness with Green and honestly follow his opinions. And we were watching last year. We're like, Green, again, and I was just getting texts from Maddie like, Green nailed it again.
We didn't have live betting. We didn't have betting yet. I couldn't bet.
We didn't.
That's right.
And so thank you. Before we let you go, though, you're out of the city of Chicago.
Yeah.
Bears fan. How is everything going? It's been sort of a roller coaster free agency period for the Bears. And then the Justin Fields saga went on. It seemed like forever, but it was really only about a week or so.
Yeah, so I mean, they've made some nice signings, right? I like some of the things they've done. Although a lot of it has been trades, so they've sapped some draft capital. But obviously landing a top two wide receiver in what's his name from the Chargers? Keenan Allen. Thank you.
Yep.
I was a little worried about that when I first saw it. I was like, man, hasn't he been injured a lot? And then I looked up his stats. Dude, guys had 100 plus catches and. Five in the last 6 or 7 years, something like that. I mean, he performs. So he's getting a little old, whatever, but putting him in with some of the skill position they already have, I really like that. I still think they need more help on the O-line and D-line. And they could probably still use another weapon, too. So it'll be interesting to see what they do in the draft. Obviously, sounds like they're going Caleb Williams, number one. So with number nine, do they take O-line? Do they take D-line? Do they take a wide receiver? Do they trade down so they can plug multiple holes? I'll be interested to see what happens there. I will say it's interesting now living in Denver. I'm not in the everyday of Chicago media. Mm-hmm. And some of my friends that were there, one of them in particular kept telling me how all the fans are calling in. They're hating on Justin Fields. They want to trade him. I never heard that personally. And even some of my other friends that live locally said they never heard that either. So maybe
they love
the radio station you listen to. But to me, he had the support of most of his fans. He had the support of the locker room. I'm going to wish him well. I hope he does really well. You know, I hope he doesn't beat us in the Super Bowl someday. I don't want to do that well. But short of that, I'm rooting for him. He seems like a great guy, obviously really talented. And I was playing this whole offseason with, I don't care what they do. If they stick with Fields and they trade down and they get like 5 first-round picks, like, sure.
Yeah.
I'll support that. And I'll be 100% behind Fields. If they decide to trade him and go with Williams, who's what? A lot of people are saying the best prospect since Peyton Manning. A little hard to pass that guy up. So I'm happy. I think this is the direction I would have personally gone, but I wouldn't have been upset if they went a different way. And, yeah, I think now they have a playoff caliber roster. I do think they need to plug some holes on
both lines
of scrimmage.
Yep.
Because not only do they not have a great starter at every position on the O-line, but they're not very deep either. So any sort of injuries and they could be in trouble there. So get some depth, you know, get a starter or two. And I think, I think they're moving in the right direction and hopefully we'll have a good young quarterback that can build around.
The good news is this is the deepest offensive line draft probably in the last 3-4 years. Wide receiver and offensive line, it's the two deepest. So like you're going to be able to get some guys that can play for you in the middle round, second, third, fourth round. So that'll help. I think the prospect fatigue is so wild to me. Greeny, you and I've been talking about Caleb Williams for 3 years. Remember when he was at Oklahoma and I had them that year and I was like, this kid is different. Like he's good. He's just different. He does things differently.
Yep.
And then, you stick around long enough. You know, it's the Matt Campbell corollary. You stick around long enough and people start to think you suck. But like Iowa State wins 8-9 games every year and people would kill for that. So Caleb is the move. Again, I don't think anybody hated Fields. I just think anybody rational looking at it could tell that he's very limited in what he can do as a passer. And he has a lot of growth left there. And he's not young. He's young, but he's 25. So in QB years, like he's not like a rookie anymore. I don't think the Bears set him up for success. But I also think if you're the type of person who's like, oh, he took a lot of sacks, and then you're like, well, the offensive line sucked. It's like, they're not necessarily related. Like, those are problems he brought from college. So I think it's fine. I think you're in a great – I would much rather be in your spot than mine as a Patriots fan. I can tell you that much. That's the first time I've said that in about 2 decades.
Yeah, maybe.
Mine too in Denver.
Yeah, well, it's going to be lean year for me and
I. I think what sealed the deal for me on Fields was – yeah, he's shown flashes, but he's played 40 games in the NFL and we still don't know.
Yeah.
How many guys have ever become the guy, like a top 5 quarterback in the NFL, where we didn't know this far? I think the only one I can think of is maybe Drew Brees, and I don't remember how long he played.
He was already like a Pro Bowler. Like you know, he had a good year with the Chargers, and they got hurt. So it wasn't necessarily like by performance, and they had the early pick and they drafted Rivers and, you know, moved on from a big contract, which isn't dissimilar, right? Like you would have had to pay Fields after this year, one way or another.
So. Right.
And I saw Greeny, your buddy, Tom Fornelli had a tweet that I think kind of like summed this up pretty nicely today. So he said the Justin Fields devotion in Chicago is probably pretty confusing to outsiders, but it's simple. He makes a lot of incredible plays, and for a fan base that's been starved for good QB play for 90% of their lives, it's hard to ignore that. The problem is there's a lot of bad in between the incredible that fans overlook because of how high the highs are. And that really is exactly how I feel about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's well put. Well put.
Yep. Well, we're happy for you. You were due. We'll be honorary Bears fans this year.
Save your appreciation for when Fields actually or when Williams actually pans out, because if anybody can screw this up, it's the Bears.
Fair.
Jay Cutler is only a phone call away, but
he can play. All right, Greeny. Thanks, buddy. Great. Good to have you.
Fantastic work. Thank you for winning every listener their March Madness bracket. Thanks for informing us, and you're always a pleasure to have on the show. We appreciate it.
Always love being on. Appreciate it, guys. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, buddy.
All right.